This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with Trouble. Dean Beck. On Hide and Seek.
And you're with Andrew the Apprentice.
Yes.
On
about
your
time
show.
I got into that top of the hour thing.
Yeah, I was wondering that myself, actually.
Maybe.
You've almost qualified.
You're almost qualified. Yeah. I've been here for 2 years.
Right. Well, we might look at that at some stage.
Sure.
Give another 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we do a sex show. We have done for 4 years on this station.
Yes. And I've been here half the time.
And
therefore,
you've been here half
be
the
on
time,
the,
and
you're
right,
the
yeah, I get your point. However, we're not qualified.
No,
although
we don't have an official.
We do have
piece
sex,
of paper,
so that probably means that
we're not together, though. Thankfully,
no. Let's be very clear on that. However, it's my great pleasure to welcome one of the sexiest lesbians I know. She is very much into sex because that's what her bio says. And she's...
do you want me to introduce myself?
She's gone about educating herself and others about the subject. And she does that with toys and publicly, apparently. Louise Barisher, welcome.
What are you saying?
Welcome to Hide and Seek.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
You take a hands-on approach to educating others about sex.
Grassroots.
Only very select clients.
When you say sex educator, what's the difference between that and a sex therapist?
Right. So I'm a sex educator and I'm not qualified as a sex therapist. So as a sex educator, I deliver workshops and seminars on different topics around sexual health. And
oh, I do
like,
that.
There you go. You're a sex educator.
I can call myself that.
There we go.
You actually can, yeah. So
I didn't
sexual
know that.
Health and like sex toys and relationships and just, you know, topics around sex.
We are sex educators. Through the show.
Yes.
You are.
Yes.
Well, there
right.
we go. We can put that on a business card.
And my little seminar thingy.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm going to write that down. Sex educator.
But I'm certainly
Dean
not
Beck.
A sex therapist or sex counsellor because that requires some special training.
Yes, and you don't want to mess with people's heads any more than you already
no,
do.
No.
So what are your specific interests in educating others?
Right. My interests, well, let's see, the seminars that I run most often would be like an intro to sex toys, mm-hmm. a intro to anal, which is a bit of fun, and also I do one on safe sex and making safe sex sexy. That's kind of the main bent of it. So those are my main three at the moment, but I also do other topics just depending on the audience and the venue.
And do you only educate other ladies?
No, all different types of people. University queer groups are people I often do work with, so that's kind of a queer and lesbian-y audience.
Right.
But it's not the only one. I also run seminars out of Device, a sex toy shop that I work in, so mixed audience, but largely women. Yeah.
And Device has got quite a little niche, hasn't it?
Device does yeah. have a little niche, yeah.
It's been catering for a real female market for mm-hmm. many years, both mm-hmm. here and New Zealand.
Yeah, so Device is a sex toy shop in Richmond and on Bridge Road. And it was set up in New Zealand originally about 15 years ago by three queer women. So there are three shops in New Zealand now and then one here in Melbourne. And it's always had an ethos which was around accessibility for women particularly. Like, we cater to all different groups and different sexual orientations, relationship styles, etc. But the focus was more to have a welcoming space for women to come in and have, you know, knowledgeable staff and that kind of stuff. So
the last 10 years has seen a dramatic improvement in the quality of sex toys
totally.
The materials
that
they use.
Yeah.
And people don't realise that some of those materials that toys are made out of can be quite horrible to you.
Yeah.
And I find some of the materials burn the hell out of me.
Yes. Put a condom on those ones.
Yeah. But the other thing is, they're generally petrochemically based toys, and exactly, if you put a condom on them, that degrades, very quickly.
The condom, it's interesting because children's toys are subject to all sorts of laws around the kind of chemicals that can go in them, whereas adult toys are not subject to those same laws. So there's lots of the cheaper materials, particularly, not only, but particularly the cheaper ones, are actually quite toxic, and it's not a good thing.
Only in the last 5 or 8 years that they've removed a particular ingredient that softened the plastics in toys, which was highly cancerous.
Yeah, so that's the phthalates, and that's what they're still present in some sex toys, but they're hoping they'll get rid of it. In North America, there's this organisation, I think it's called like the Alliance Against Toxic Sex Toys, or like Toxic Sex Toy something, and it specifically works, you know, to change the laws around that.
They also have drop-in, you know, recycle bins.
At your supermarket, you go in and you drop in your spare toy.
Yeah, I don't know whose job is it to go through it, but yes, they do.
So, Louise, being at the coalface of sex toy industry... Mm-hmm.
Being at the pointy end of the dildo.
not the flared base.
Generally, do you get a sense of who your main clients are?
Well, I do work in the store mostly, and I certainly do get an idea of who our main clients are. And I'd say they would be probably, like mostly women, but not by a large margin. So let's say 3/5 would be women. This is just my, like, very unscientific guessing.
Yes.
And I'd say that probably also... around 3/5, not necessarily of those women, but, you know, in general, would probably be a straight crowd. And then you've got the other sort of, the other bits of the queers that would come in. It's certainly known as being a queer-friendly space as well.
So straight women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a perception, and we've talked on this show numerous times, and when we had Chantel Austin on the show, she would, there's a changing dynamic amongst the straight community about an increased
awareness. Oh, they're filthy out in the suburbs.
An awareness of their
Chantel
sexuality.
Austin's a swinger, right?
Yes. have you seen a change in your clientele? Has there been an increase in the swinging crowd that you've seen?
I blame 50 Shades of Grey. Myself.
50 Shades of Grey has had an influence, and I think 50 Shades of Grey's influence was perhaps quite temporary, though. Like, there was certainly an influx of people purchasing black handcuffs or that sort of thing in a short time after.
But what it did was give people permission
totally,
to explore.
Yeah, which I think is great. And to answer your question, Andrew, I think that... was your question about changes in clientele?
Yeah.
So I've only been working at the store for 2 years, so I'm not sure if that's long enough to get a really broad picture sort of thing. It's probably still the case that people who are more comfortable with their sexuality or explore more are more likely to come into the store.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean that everyone who comes in is comfortable and confident, but I guess it's a tendency, you know.
Yeah.
So you'd probably more likely see the swingers and that kind of thing.
But the nature of that store is that it has its own niche and customer base that go to it for the reasons that it provides.
Yeah.
A little bit like Manhouse does.
Yeah,
a little bit like Manhouse.
But not like that.
But not like that.
Yeah.
But that relates...
More colourful.
Yeah. More colourful. But what? And so what?
More purple.
What creates?
Yes, a lot more
what
purple.
Creates a female friendly environment?
So. There's no pornography sold at Device, and although there is potentially lots of pornography that women would be interested in, or, you know, that might be really great porn, it was just a decision of the company that not having porn would make it a more accessible
place. So there's
no
massive wall
down the side of
videos
and
DVDs.
So when you come into our store, we actually have an open front window. It's not dark, it's not a wall, and so you can see inside the costumes and novelties and that kind of thing. And then when you come into the store, then you can go around to the rear section of the store, which has got a sort of a half divider between the two parts, and that's where all the toys are. So that's kind of how we make it accessible. You can see the sunlight coming in, you can see the staff inside, that kind of thing.
And, Dean, that's quite different to how male focus.
Oh, it's very different to the trench coat brigade.
It's
absolutely.
The flashing lights, adult store.
There's no sticky carpet.
Yeah. No, there's no carpet even.
There's no wank rooms at the back.
No.
It's clean.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Louise. She's talking about sex toys at the moment. We'll talk about other stuff later. You're on Hide and Seek. I'm Joy, 94.9.
Hey everybody, this is Nath Valvo.
And I'm Reese Nicholson.
Me and Reese love group sex.
I'm dead inside.
And every time we want group sex, we come and see Dean and his apprentice Andrew on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9, for fuck's sake.
That's right, you're on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek with Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice. And Dean's equivalent in the lesbian world.
Yes, I mean, we actually look quite alike.
Yes,
Louise Basher is with us. She talks about sex and she knows a bit about sex toys.
Yes.
I reckon mine are bigger than yours, but I'm not saying.
Well.
What is it about boys? They just want bigger. But with girls, it's about getting the right spot.
You mean the G-spot?
Oh, well, that's
part
of it.
How is that not the same with boys?
No.
G-spot, P-spot.
No. No.
G-spot, is it?
It's about length and width. Length and width.
But, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But female sex toys have length and width as well.
Okay, everyone's different, right? You know, some people it's all about length and width, no matter whether it's their bum
just
or their
on
vagina
that
or
sex
whatever.
Educated cat
yeah,
now, right.
Some people it's all about the angle and the spot, you know.
Mm. Yes, true. That's true.
True, true, true.
Now, we were off air, we were talking about lubes.
We were.
What's
I'm
your
a big lube nerd. Well,
no brand names, just what type of lube is it?
Well, water-based in that case, but that's very limiting because there's thin ones and thick ones and all different types of ones.
Mm. Okay.
So, I take it, and working in the shop, you'd be able to talk to your clients about, okay, this toy works with this lube because it's very confusing.
It's very confusing and silly, yeah. There's oil, water-based, silicon-based. I just mean silly in the sense that it becomes really complex when you're just trying to tell someone something simple, like, don't use silicon on this toy. Then it's like, but wait, what about this? What about this? What about this?
And here's the thing. Most lubes sold in this country are actually not lubes. And if you look at them carefully, they'll say on the bottle, body massage or body glide because the term personal lubricant is a legislated term, which means you have to have a TGA approval because it's a product that goes inside you.
Oh, God.
Mm. Yeah.
So that makes it all the more harder.
Indeed, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm.
So what are some of your basics, Louise, in suggesting to a novice about lubes and toys?
Oh, about lubes and toys. Well, in terms of lube, I would tend to try and keep it simple and just say go with a good water-based, unless people had specific queries or questions about, you know, lube in different situations.
But most people, if you say use this, they'll go, fine.
Yeah, most people will. In the store we have testers, though, so we can put them on your hands and you can just feel like what they feel like.
Louise mentioned something before which we didn't pick up, but we should actually highlight. What is wrong with sugar being in lubes, Louise?
Uh-huh. Well, the main issue with sugar being in lubes is that if they're used vaginally, it can cause thrush.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you've got all the ingredients. You've got water, you've got carbohydrates and sugars.
Yep.
And
it's like brewing your own beer.
And
and
it's nice and warm and cozy.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. It's like brewing your own
Fair
beer.
Fair enough. There you go.
Feel better now, Andrew?
I've got nothing wrong with that.
As far as I know, that's not an issue for anal use, is it, Dean?
I've never had anal thrush.
I don't think so.
That's what you're saying. Yeah, I wonder, why is that? Wow.
Why haven't you had anal thrush?
No, why don't...
I think it's to do with what's... I think it's to do with what's already living in the vagina compared to what's living in your bum. Like, I think it's to do with different.
Oh, I'm so glad you went there.
I don't know, I'm just guessing.
Now, Louise, you studied a master's in public health.
Correct.
What is that?
So, I did my master's in public health at Melbourne University, and public health is like, if you think about it, you've got doctors at one end dealing with individuals' health needs. At the other end, you've got people doing public health, which is all about policy or like strategies to improve health broadly. And that's things like, you know, anti-obesity campaigns.
Health promotion.
Or health promotion, exactly. Like, you know, having more cycling paths, that kind of stuff. In my specific case, I didn't study cycling paths. That's not my thing. I studied sexual health. So I was doing sexual health promotion. I did some subjects around, you know, different types of STIs and different things to do with sexual health. But also I did my major research on gay men and HIV in Africa.
Yeah. Now, right, stop. Lesbian in Africa, gay men... What's that about?
Well, I haven't actually been to Africa, so it was a, it was based on
a desktop from review. Here?
I did it from here. Yeah, yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, it was based on I was studying what programs are available,
yep,
like what kinds of health promotion programs or community organisations are running HIV programs for gay men throughout Africa.
Not easy so, when those countries don't acknowledge the existence
exactly,
of gay men.
It doesn't. Yeah. But it wouldn't have been any easier if I was on the ground because I was interested in comparing the different countries. So
you'd
have to be flying around a lot. Exactly. I would have to go to every city and say, hey, do you know where the gays are? You know,
yeah, and you're a lesbian, so that must
have... It would have been really hard to get around. So it was,
a white lesbian.
A white lesbian. Yes.
Well, just saying.
Correct, I am. But
talk about stand out like the proverbial.
But well, it would depend where I was, yeah. But I was just looking at websites and articles and stuff from those different countries and looking at the programs they have. And there's actually more than you'd think, but still not nearly enough.
How do they compare? Was that about comparing them to each other or to us?
My research was looking at why is it so hard to set these programs up? Why are they having trouble running? And then what are the things that make them run better or help them out?
Most of that would be cultural though, wouldn't it?
Well, it really depends. Like, you've got all these different layers going on. Like, firstly, Africa and like a lot of parts of Africa are fairly generally under-resourced, so it's not specifically a gay issue, it's just general
health promotion.
Health
promotion
and other types of things like that. But then you've got those things that relate specifically to the gay stuff, so it's illegal to be gay in lots of places.
How do you access those men?
How do you access them? And also, when you say cultural, there's quite high rates of gay men actually being married to women or that sort of stuff going on. Like, it's just quite culturally different from what you find
and,
in the
West. Also, you know, religion plays a major part in various areas and different cultural groups will have different cultural expectations. And
you can't even really talk about Africa. I mean, I was looking at, you know, Senegal, Cameroon, Uganda, Mozambique. You've got, you know, that's so many. I mean, that's just four examples.
Would it be better defined as men who have sex with men?
That's actually what my research was titled.
Right, okay.
My research was titled, What Are the Barriers and Facilitators to HIV prevention programming for MSM in Africa. So it's not, you know,
sure,
it's a little science-y,
but it's just that, you know, like, we have great issues trying to get to that sector here.
Totally, yeah.
You know, throw in all of the other stuff that is in Africa into the mix, it must be really hard.
Because
when I look at Africa, I don't go, black men, they're gay.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rates of
homosexuality are similar throughout the world.
Yeah, indeed.
But how that manifests is really different. So, there's similar rates of gay sex going on. It's also, they're also having wives and children and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but it really depends. But there was an example, I think it was from Burkina Faso or Ghana or somewhere in West Africa, where they had employed as peer educators a bunch of married men, like a married bisexual men or however they identified themselves, to sort of know their own and talk to their own about HIV risk, which I thought was really interesting. And I don't know how they managed to access those men in the first place, because that seems like the challenge for me. But somehow they managed to do it. So
you compared that, the various programs in Africa that you identified, did you compare them to Australia at all?
Not really.
Just within themselves, what were the differences? That was the purpose.
That was the main purpose. Yeah, yeah. Well, the main purpose was how well are they doing at meeting the need and, you know, why is it harder for them to not meet it better?
Given HIV, what we hear about HIV rates in Africa...
Dropping.
Dropping, but high.
And it being a whole of population issue.
Yeah. That's another reason why there's a lot less attention on the gay issue. Because in the West, you have smaller groups of the population who are at high risk. That are targeted with prevention, exactly.
Where I imagine it would be a blanket approach.
Exactly. Yeah. So in Africa, there's a blanket approach. And that's important because there is a higher risk for the whole population. Mm. But within that, there are also groups that have a significantly higher risk. So, for example, like in Senegal, there's a general HIV rate of 1%. So it's actually one of the lowest in Africa. But the HIV rate around gay men is 25%, according to the surveys they've done. Which is probably not representative, but it's still obviously significantly higher. And the same is true in everywhere. Once you get down to the southern part of Africa where you've already got rates of 16-20%, you're going to see much less of a difference between gay men and the normal population, just because there's less room to go upwards, if you know what I mean. Like, but I think Kenya, there's a general rate of 6% or something, and then the you know, amongst gay men, it's between 20% and 40%, which depending on what you read. So,
so still, it still is important at, for those communities to have targeted messaging.
Absolutely, and especially because some of them, like, it's almost hard to believe because in the West it seems so obvious that there's a higher HIV risk for gay men, but in certain parts of Africa, they aren't actually aware that there's an increased risk of HIV transmission from anal sex, and they think that maybe even...
Because they've always had a blanket approach.
Yeah. Especially because it was identified that in some HIV prevention campaigns, there's lots of images of, like, mother-to-child transmission and an association of don't have sex with sex workers, and they've got pictures of women. And as a result, men didn't identify that having sex with other men was a major risk. Mm. So this is not everyone by any means. There's some very savvy people out there, but it's... It's interesting.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
Louise Boucher is with us. We're talking sex toys, gay men in Africa, rooting, and...
just sex stuff.
And
sex stuff all over.
Lube, pretty much.
Yes.
Pretty much.
There's some more stuff to talk about.
We'll do that right after this on Hide and Seek.
Hi, this is Catherine Devaney. I know you've just got to run off and masturbate, but before you do, you're listening to Hide and Seek with Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice on Joy 94.9.
With all this talk of sex toys, they're probably running off already.
Oh, I'm so twitchy. I can't wait to get out of here,
frankly. You, of course, are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with Andrew the Apprentice, Dean Beck and Louise Boucher.
Boucher, well done.
Gosh, where do next?
I'm going home to bounce up and down on band. Sure. But anyway, that sounds sweet.
Louise, you also talk about sexual health as well, not only in Africa, as we're talking about, but Australia as well.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the... Where do you do that? Do you do that with clients at the shop? Or do you do it...
Sometimes it comes up in the shop. It's not the main thing we talk about when I'm in store.
You talk about lube.
We talk about lube.
Let
and
me
vibrating.
Help you with your vagina.
But, yeah, a little bit of that.
Where else do you talk about it?
So I deliver workshops to different kinds of groups. And then, so for example, like a lot of the people I work with are university students. And I'll be doing talks at, you know, university conferences, student union groups, women's groups, whatever. And that's when I'd be talking about sexual health stuff.
And that's why we were saying you're very similar to Dean in that you're doing these, you know, anal health workshops and just sexual health workshops overall. Mm-hmm. How do you find, particularly say you're talking to a queer group at a uni,
mm-hmm.
so they're all, you know, late teens, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Do they take you seriously?
How well educated are they coming into that sort of atmosphere?
Good question.
Often students that are associated with university queer groups are quite well educated. They're not the only, like, queer groups are not the only ones I work with.
No.
But they do, like, I do often work with them, and they are fairly well clued up already. In terms of how they receive me, I mean, it is quite funny when I say I'm going to go teach an anal workshop and then... I'll turn up and lots of people are surprised to see me walk in the door because it's a lot of gay boys and they're like, what's this person doing, you know? Normally I can win them over with my bag of butt plugs and my knowledge about lube and stuff, but...
You see, Louise, that's where you should give me a call. And
I think we could work something out. You two are doing a
dynamic duo road show. You're going to be selling to... massive theatres and everything.
Andrew, it's about passing on knowledge. It's not about selling anything.
It's not about our egos. It's not about us being dead.
Oh, bullshit.
However, there will be a book and a range.
There will be a toy range.
And T-shirts and merchandise.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, and we'll do it right.
Yeah, of course. So I'm just interested because we hear often that sex education in schools does not cater at all for queer community.
I've done very little in schools. I've done a little bit in schools and I'm open to doing more, but I only really do work in schools when I'm invited to. So when I know someone who works in a school who says, hey, do you want to come and work at this you know, event or
come and teach
group?
Our 12-year-olds about anal sex.
No, I never teach about anal sex when I go to a school. I never specifically teach about it. I'd answer
maybe
questions.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. But no, I'd certainly answer questions on it, or if it was brought up, I'd treat it seriously. But I wouldn't go in and teach an anal sex workshop at a high school.
But that's what I'm saying.
But what I would, when I do go to a high school, it's just there's lots of issues around what you can and can't do, and I prefer just to be invited rather than to... Yeah.
But queer youth getting into their teens or when they're sexually active and particularly at uni may not know a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's because you don't have that history in sex ed at school.
Yep. Do you do any work with minus 18?
I don't. I haven't. But not since I was working at Also, which was three years ago. But,
yeah. The reason I say that is they do some great stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Yeah. It would be really fun to work with them, especially because they have kind of a peer education approach. So I think that, in fact, often when I'm teaching sex education to those groups that are already fairly well clued up, I think about it as more a peer education enterprise in that I'm teaching people who are sort of beacons of knowledge for their own friends groups rather than imparting my knowledge to them specifically for their own benefit. Do you know what I mean? So in terms of working with minus 18, it would be really great to work with minus 18 knowing that they have access to a much broader range of young people themselves. Mm. And yeah, that'll be really fun. If you're listening out there, minus 18 people.
That collaborative approach is really important when you're running workshops like that. I've found that hello, David. First time I had someone from the fisting community, if you like, that I knew was, you know, had 40 years experience, sitting in the back row of one of my seminars, I broke out in a cold sweat because it only professes to be an introduction to the subject. Mm-hmm. So to have someone of that calibre there, yes, it is a little bit intimidating. Yeah. But what I learned over the years was that encouraging those people to share their knowledge and engage in the conversation means that we all get to grow and learn and understand more. Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure when I started off doing this kind of work, I was a bit intimidated by that as well. Mm. But I like to think that now I'm good at sort of harnessing their knowledge and bringing them into the
teaching.
It's actually really great, yeah.
I take great pleasure in knowing that for every single person that has been to one of my seminars that has a lot of experience, they've all gone away with something that they didn't know previously that they will take with them forever. And that's great.
And even if it's not a piece of new knowledge, often even like very experienced people can take away a new way of talking about something or a new, even just order of talking about things, just like simple nuances. If you're already a good presenter, you can still take away and learn different things like that. Yeah.
What are some of the core questions you get? As an educator, what are some of the core questions you get from the community?
Well, that's a very tricky question. Some of the core questions I get when I do workshops.
Most common questions you get.
I often get asked questions around, you know, will this sex act lead to STI risk? You know, like people want to know about oral sex or should I use condoms this time or that kind of stuff. So I think that indicates there's still, although people know about condom use and that sort of stuff, there's a lot of that those borderlines and grey areas are still quite uncertain for people, you know?
So people think, some people think that, I only need to use condom in this situation or if I'm going to have sex with someone but I know that I'm not going to come, I'm going to withdraw before I come. Mm-hmm. I don't need to worry about a condom.
I don't know if it's that black and white. I think that people are more interested in knowing what are the likelihood of there being risk in those grey areas. I think that it's not, although a condom, it's obviously very important to talk about condoms and how they are the primary way of preventing STIs. Sometimes it's more useful to have a slightly more nuanced discussion around, you know, is this a potentially risky thing? You know, why would or wouldn't you do it? That kind of stuff.
I think what we're missing here and what sadly we've missed for decades is educating people on the different sizes of condoms, different materials they're made out of, why you would use one material over another, why the perfect fit is so important.
Totally.
Those sorts of things.
I want to do a workshop on condoms, actually. I'm working on one. Should we do one together?
Absolutely. Totally. Would love to.
Great.
Cool.
It'll be part of our package of materials and our T-shirts and TFNs.
And condoms are currently being redesigned.
They are.
Bill Gates Foundation has funded a multi-million dollar investment in the redesigning of the condom, and there's some interesting things coming forward.
It's actually really, really cool. They're designing condoms you can put on easily with one hand. You just kind of pull them down. They're a bit like an accordion.
It's like a concertina.
Oh, a concertina.
Yeah. Which sounds odd, but actually they come out smooth. Like they're crinkly when you're wearing them.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
They're trying to make condoms which feel better or don't reduce the sensation, basically. Because a lot of people say that condoms do reduce
the
sensation.
That's the main complaint, isn't it?
It is the main complaint. It's and it is a a relevant issue that we should take seriously because it's a disincentive for using them. But so Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation said, well, look, we'll give you a whole bunch of money if you can invent a really great new condom that we can produce cheaply and distribute around the world. And that's a really exciting.
I find one of those extra large green Garbo bags really helpful.
Like, I learned more things from hide and seek, for God's sakes. School didn't provide it.
Not something that I listen to on a regular basis.
You certainly want something a bit more reliable and than what you get in the schoolyard. Hide and seek is the first place you should start. My sex education involved the breeding of mice, then talking about what they had done.
Oh, wonderful.
And if you know Jeffrey, you'll know that that's pretty true. Now, you are listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.5.
That's right. Hide and Seek.
Hello, Jeffrey.
Him, Dean Beck, and me and their friends. And, of course, we have Louise
Basham.
Dean's equivalent.
Now, Louise, in French, your name sounds like...
Boucher.
Oh, I think I just blew.
Now, we've had an email come in to 042... email come in to onair@joy.org.au. You can also SMS 0427JOY 9409. And
Ben
would like to know, what resources would you suggest young gay males check out to develop their sex education?
Yeah, excellent question.
Well, there's a website called XTube.
Yes, there is a website called XTube.
That is not the one to go to.
What I would suggest is developing a good sex education prior to critiquing that website, because while it may contain valuable information, it's also worth having a bit of a perspective on it.
She's good.
Oh, very good. Oh, my God. You two are getting go far. Minus 18?
Minus 18 was an excellent resource. Minus 18 is terrific. So it's
and you're talking about the way they do it, too, is really important. The way they talk about sex is really important.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The way that Minus does. Of course. In a really inclusive and sex-positive framework. So I think sex positivity is really important, like coming at things from a sort of positive, happy place and sort of strength-based place rather than, fear of STIs, that kind of thing. So Minus is a great place to go. They've got some good videos on their website as well.
And also, I've always been very conscious about language when talking about sex. I never refer to it as being dark or dirty or naughty or nasty or that sort of language people use but don't mean, which is fine. But when there is so many hang-ups about sex, I think sex positive language is really important and to be mindful of what you are communicating, because it comes down to things like consent.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And Dean, I was just also reflecting on Ben's question. Red Aware and
Youth Empowerment Against HIV.
That's right.
They're
a great organisation. We've had them on Hide and Seek a bit and also at our various outside broadcasts that Joy has run. And they're a little organisation.
Really great organisation. Yeah.
And there's another really good website called body.com.
I'm not familiar with that, but
it's an international website.
Okay. Yeah.
It has terrific information.
So, Ben, try out and also, which is YEAH, or minus 18.
And I think Headspace doing some stuff too.
I'm sure
Headspace are doing some stuff around. Yes, they are, because they've got the condom packs in there. Yes, Headspace have got some good resources on sexual health.
And Ben, if you're at uni, go head along to your queer department if there's one there and see what they've got around.
And in terms of getting testing and that kind of stuff, Melbourne Sexual Health Centre will do free testing.
Head on down,
anonymous even if you want it to be.
Stroll on in, walk-in clinic.
So it's a great place to get started if you haven't had a test before.
You can wear a badge if you want, but generally it's pretty anonymous. and very efficient and...
Free.
Easy.
Yeah.
And the thing with getting tested is if you stick to a regular pattern, if every 3 months or every 6 months at least, then you will not get the hang-ups about it. If you do... lock that in, and they've got great little systems like SMS reminders, which I got last week. Thank you, Melbourne Sexual Health.
That reminds me, I've got to do mine.
Get an SMS from Ryan, you'll never forget.
Yeah. That's what my partner's for.
Oh, man.
Oh, he'll be right. So,
we were talking about New Caledonia.
We were talking about French.
We weren't. And then we segue or go yes, to segue.
I can't think of a segue.
Because we've been talking about French letters all day, right?
We have.
So,
yeah.
Very good.
And nice. You can speak French, okay. And your name's French, yes. And you're from France. No?
I'm not actually from France. I'm from New Zealand, but that's close.
You learned a lot about sex eating with French ladies?
Yes. I spent 2 years in New Caledonia, and part of that was spent amongst the lesbians. There's actually lots of lesbians in New Caledonia.
Amusingly,
I was actually on the Travel Pod show on Joy not so long ago, maybe a month ago, and I was talking about this very issue. Despite what you may expect, New Caledonia is chock-a-block full of lesbians. So it's a pretty fun venue to hang out, and I ended up living in a share house with like six women, and it was pretty crazy. And
so
fun.
Your reason for going there was for a holiday?
No, I was teaching English. I was an English teacher.
Yeah, sure.
Ooh la la.
I was a high school English teacher by day, and just romped around my life. Come on, I was young.
Okay.
No, it was really good fun, actually. It was it was très bien.
Good on you, love. That's interesting because French men are so hung up about homosexuality. It's weird.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
It's so not my impression.
No. They were
all
bisexual.
Seem to have boyfriends. Exactly.
They were all bisexual. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
They're not gay. None of them are gay. Okay. None of them are gay.
Well, some of them are gay.
They're all bisexual.
Some of them are gay. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got issues.
Maybe they're just bisexual. Maybe it's in their genes.
No. I know what you're saying.
Another good thing about New Caledonia is that...
You'll get me in trouble now.
Another good thing about New Caledonia is there's a military base there, so there's lots of these really buff dudes with these little, like, short haircuts walking around, and it looks like a gay porn.
Like gendarme. Like
exactly. That's just the lesbians.
No. Now, lesbians are out riding horses.
Tell me what interests you with regards to international sexual health, because there's a minefield.
Well... what doesn't interest me is probably more the question. I'm interested in everything that's going on around the world and different sexual health things. So whether it be, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates' condom-making enterprise or, you know, HIV prevention for gay men in Africa, I'm also interested in things to do with... there's some really cool sex worker stuff going on in Thailand, for example,
around
condom use. Yeah, all that sort of stuff interests me. Same with Brazil. They've got a really strong sex work group that's really you know, pro sexual health, and they have their own clothing label and all sorts of cool stuff. So that kind of the diversity of what's going on in the world in terms of sex and sexuality and sexual health interests me a great deal.
It's I'm not allowed to say this, but I'm going to. They're not out publicly yet, but the new HIV figures in this country soon to be released will indicate quite a rise in our migrant population, which makes sense. We've got a lot of them coming through, but it's something that we will have to adjust and deliver the right health response to.
Are you suggesting people with HIV are coming, more people who already have it are coming into the country, or do you think there's perhaps a gap in education for new migrants around?
I don't know the finer details of that, but.
It would be interesting to know which was going on.
There is quite a spike in that population.
Well, certainly some countries won't accept people who have HIV in as migrants. So I think
less and less, though. But yes,
less and less. No, I agree. But
We live in a global world, and it's going to be something that we have to be aware of and manage accordingly.
Yeah.
So, you Catholics, put condoms on. Louise, it's been a delight to have you in tonight. Thank you very much.
It's been a delight being here. Thank you very much, Dean and Andrew.
We're going to have to get you in again sometime.
I'm looking forward to fisting with you soon.
Yay! I'm looking forward to fisting with you soon too. Perhaps we can put our hands like together and we can double fist someone with both of our hands.
We'll be back to say goodbye right after this.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.